Hello, you're listening to People, Pets, and Vets with Dr. Brad Miller and registered veterinary technician Angel Martin.
Hello.
Each week, we bring you current events and news in the veterinary industry and share our thoughts and perspective on how they impact us in our animal hospital. We also try to give you an insight and behind-the-scenes glance at our clinic and the people who work in it. This episode 103, that's 103, is being brought to you by Georgia Veterinary Associates, a family of animal hospitals caring for your family pet.
Mi familia es tu familia.
Okay, getting fancy. So we are once again broadcasting from beautiful Lawrenceville, Georgia. Spring is upon us. The, would you call it yellow or green pine pollen, or is it a yellow-green?
I think it's yellow. Okay. It's disgusting.
It's everywhere. We had a bit of rain to kind of rinse the slate clean yesterday, and, you know, literally 6 hours later, covering everything again, vehicles.
We picked up our car out of the airport, and we parked in, like, the covered parking, and my mom was just so amazed about how the pollen could get on the car inside the parking deck, and I was like, yeah, those little pollen buggers, they get everywhere, don't they?
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, welcome back to Atlanta, right? So, like, instantly when we walk outside, we see the collection of the yellow pollen, like, on the curbs, like, in the creeks and the crevices of the curbs, you know, or in the curbs. And the sidewalks and stuff. So it was definitely like, welcome back to Atlanta, smack in the face.
Yeah, then the heavy rain yesterday, water would pool and start running, you know, having some runoff. And then you have all this thick layer of pollen on the top of it.
Yeah.
Almost like a seafoam kind of a, is that a good analogy?
I guess, yeah. Maybe like soup skin is what I think of.
What is soup skin?
Have you ever like made soup? Like a creamy soup, and then it like sits in the pot and it develops this like layer on top.
Like a potato soup.
Yeah. So I call that soup skin.
Okay.
And so that's kind of what I think of the pollen kind of running down the, with the water. It's like a skin. It's like a layer on top.
We've got probably three more weeks of heavy, heavy pollen as everything starts to come back and bloom and the leaves are coming back. So anyway, that's it for the weather report today.
Take your Allegro, people.
Yeah. So, healthy pet, happy life. Anxiety, I think, is a good topic, and I know we've talked about it related to COVID and all the new pets that we're seeing and how people are getting super anxious these days. And really, I think we've kind of gone down the road of what will become separation anxiety, maybe when the people go back to work and their pets stay home, but also maybe the lack of socialization of these pets, so that whenever they are either coming into the clinic or down the road they go to a dog park or I guess a little bit more of a public event, they are not going to know what people are.
But I don't think people actually understand that their dog is anxious, right? So just to kind of give you a little story, when I drove into work this morning, I was leaving my house at like, I don't know, 7:20 in the morning. So it's daylight out. Thank you, daylight savings time, or the change there. And there was a man and a woman. They were walking what looked to be, I'm going to guess, like a 12, 13-month-old Yorkie mix dog. As my car approached, the dog cowered and like was terrified. And the people just thought it was so funny. They were kind of giggling and then they kind of tugged on the dog's harness. And as my car crept by, and I'm going like 20, 25 miles an hour in the neighborhood, right? As my car crept by, the dog just like was even more and more scared. Like they were on the sidewalk, but the dog was cowered and like going towards the grass.
Didn't know what a car was, a vehicle was.
He had no idea.
Huh. Well, that's, I guess that illustrates that the phobias and the anxieties and, you know, some of these other issues that pets are dealing with. It's the same thing in people, right? You have all different shapes, sizes, forms, fashions, and some people are very well adjusted. Some people are not. That's, you know, I'm just trying to think, how old was this dog?
I'm assuming, now I don't know the dog or the family, but I'm assuming based on the way that the dog looked, it was relatively young. Okay. A year old is what I would suggest. Maybe slightly older, maybe slightly younger, but roughly around a year old.
Yeah. So,
and who knows, maybe they adopted the dog. Like I said, I don't know them. I didn't recognize them driving through the neighborhood, but it was just, the reactions from the people wasn't comforting the dog and kind of letting him know, like, this is nothing to be scared of.
They thought it was funny. They made light of it. And instead of helping the dog work through the situation, oftentimes just the opposite happens. A dog will not be on its best behavior and start growling or acting aggressively otherwise. Yeah. And as an owner, instead of stopping that behavior and correcting it, a lot of people, the tendency is to say, oh, it's okay. It's okay. You're okay. You're okay. You're okay. And you wind up praising the dog for horrible behavior.
Yeah, so I've seen that too.
I don't know that I have the answers. I guess
I think the biggest thing is just to recognize, exactly, to recognize the behaviors that you're seeing. It's kind of like similar to when we have new staff that come on board, right? We try to teach and educate them to look for anxious behaviors in pets to keep themselves safe, and obviously to keep the pet safe as well.
Right.
So it's the same kind of thing with homeowners or people in general, pet owners, just recognizing when your dog is exhibiting anxious behavior.
So,
and it's not the same in every dog, just like as you said, it's not the same in every human.
And veterinary behaviorists are few and far between. It's really difficult to find one in your state and then try to get an appointment, especially during COVID time. So oftentimes work with the veterinary staff, can offer some help and insight, work with some local trainers, try to find, a vetted trainer who, seems to fit the bill that you're looking for. But it's an issue, and it's going to become a bigger issue.
Are a lot of trainers still doing like desensitization therapies? Is that still like a big thing? Because it used to be like, if your dog was afraid of this, give it to your dog until they're not afraid of it.
Yeah, it depends on the dog, and it depends on the phobia. I mean, that behavior, I guess behavior problems in pets are very obvious to you once somebody tells you why your pet is doing that and what you need to do about it.
Gotcha.
But you, as the sole set of eyes and ears in the situation, obviously you couldn't correct it, and you just don't know. But a lot of times whenever these issues are described, then it makes sense. And you're like, oh yeah, of course that's why he or she does this, that, or the other. Sure. So anyway.
And just like with people, there are medications to help cope with anxiety and kind of things, but not for every pet, right? So some training and that kind of thing that you were talking about, you can kind of help them work through it versus just throwing medications at it.
Yeah, some behavior modification, sometimes medications, fluoxetine, trazodone are two drugs that we commonly use, but they rarely will completely fix the behavior problem by themselves.
Sure.
So, so actually the last story I had, I'm going to bring up as the first story related to that, if I can find it. So a lot of these stories I pulled actually yesterday from the AHA weekly news roundup. Tony McReynolds usually puts this together. So at the very bottom of that, the title says, a majority of companies plan to make their offices more pet-friendly post-pandemic, survey finds. Without reading it, what would be your thoughts? Okay, there's a lot of pets, right? We've been through this whole COVID pandemic. We're 12 months into it now. As things start to open up.
So without reading it, my take is that we were asking, like, what is my impression from the title there?
Yeah.
I think that there's a study that shows that more companies are going to let people bring their pets to work. That's my impression of that.
That's exactly what I would have thought, but that's not the way the story reads.
Okay. So what does the story read like?
Because I'm thinking, great. Now we're going to have every one of our employees want to bring their pets to work. And we're in an animal hospital, right? So it's a little different than maybe a Fortune 500 company, but what's going to happen with us and what's going to happen at these other locations? Is it going to be like moms bringing their toddlers, like a daycare? Are we going to have a doggy daycare? What's about to happen here? Well, the story basically reads that 59% of 500 companies surveyed plan on allowing their employees more flexibility in staying home and working so that they can be with their pets.
So that's interesting.
Yeah.
That's super interesting, because the way that I read it, like I said, is that totally they're just going to start opening the doors and letting people bring their pets to work, which, as you said, it's something that we do cross here often because we are an animal hospital, right? Like, we're meant to house animals. But we often have to have that conversation with new hires. They're like, this is a distraction for you at work.
Right.
Now your pet is potentially exposed to illness that they wouldn't be exposed to before. You know, not to mention like if your pet does have a behavior problem, right? So now you add all of that into a place that's not a veterinary hospital.
Yeah.
Then what? But that's interesting.
So yeah, I'm like,
what
is going to happen here? But yeah, the story reads that for the respondents, the top concern for returning to work and making this change is a fear of separation anxiety.
For probably the person and the dog?
Probably the person and the dog, yeah. So I just thought that was fascinating.
That is pretty fascinating.
We know that in our industry, curbside care, you know, is something that we're still completely doing here, trying to do the safest thing we can. But it's changed the way we do business, and we know that we're going to do that moving forward in some
sure.
degree. And then, yeah, these businesses are going to have remote workers. You know, the prediction on less business travel globally,
right.
that's going to be a huge thing that doesn't happen, I guess. But I don't know, fascinating that, oh, yeah, well, you can stay home to be with your pet.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
I also wonder if they're going to start putting in, like, their benefits packages. Like, I know a lot of companies already offer, like, pet insurance. But, like,
yeah.
What about, like, if your pet's sick or hospitalized, are you going to start seeing, you know, some sick
paid
days?
Sick leave to be with your pet?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
I mean, we've definitely seen some cases here where clients have missed time out of work, or they have to, you know, routinely bring their pet here to the hospital multiple days in a row and it makes them late or something like that. So that will be an interesting turn of events. One thing it, I think, kind of sews up is that the importance of the human-animal bond, and hopefully the importance of the veterinary hospital moving forward.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Hopefully we can continue to be a huge part in helping make some of those healthcare decisions for pets and the people who love them.
So today is the 29th of March, right? We typically record these on Sundays. We had kind of a busy day. I just got back from travel. So we're doing this on Monday, the 29th. Tomorrow is March 30th. Do you know what March 30th is?
No.
You don't know?
No.
It is National Doctors Day. Did you know that?
Doctors?
So I think it's meant for human physicians, but...
Real doctors.
Wow. Did you just say that about yourself? Real doctors?
That's what people say.
Yeah. So National Doctors Day is meant to honor the professionals for their dedication and contributions to society and their communities. So
cool.
We are actually going to be putting together a little... I don't know what they are, like short 1 second videos, I guess, on social media of our doctors here in the hospitals.
Oh, cool. So that'll be pushed out within the next week or so, or starting on the 30th?
It's going to go tomorrow. They're just, I don't even know what the word is, boomerangs, I guess, where they're just like one, it's like a picture, but it has like a 1 second loop of like a video.
Just the one doctor.
Oh my gosh. It's like a 1 second video of someone doing something.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know what you're talking about. Okay,
cool. So anyways, happy National Doctors Day, and thank you for your dedication to your craft.
Your craft. Very cool. Let's continue on with some stories. Chemotherapy usually intended for dogs is treating a red fox's lymphoma. Top of the page on the roundup. So there is evidently a red fox that has developed T-cell lymphoma.
His name is Joker.
Joker. And Purdue University is working with some typical chemo drugs that we would commonly use here as well to treat this red fox.
New chemo drugs on the market. Anyways, right? So didn't Virbac come out with something new?
Yeah, they came out with a new mast cell treatment to help locally destroy the mast cell and whenever it's in inoperable areas. So,
how do you say that? Stefelfonta?
Sure. That's close enough. I don't have it in front of me.
Stefelfonta. It's,
yeah.
Yeah. Breakthrough injectable solution to treat mast cell tumors in dogs. They are FDA approved. Anyway, so yeah, it's super interesting. I mean, obviously if T-cell lymphoma is very different than mast cell tumors, but mast cell tumors, I think we've talked about before, are pretty common, in our canine species. Fair statement.
Yep. One of the most common types that we see. I watched the webinar on that the other night, and, I don't know. I think we need a little more information. I'd like to see some more of the studies and, clinically cause and effect. So,
Sure.
One Health, we've talked about that in the past, right?
Yes.
So going along with National Doctors Day and really all of the healthcare professionals working together and trying to help benefit each other. COVID-19, perfect example. But at North Carolina State, and I think the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, they have found evidence of Bartonella infection in the blood of some people with schizophrenic disorders.
That's interesting.
Yes, very interesting. So, I don't know. This is really, really early into it, I think. But they're also looking like at Toxoplasma gondii to see if that is typically a well, that's what people the pregnant ladies can infect their fetus with if they get exposed to that via cat feces. But also it can cause some CNS disease. So I don't know. I just thought that was kind of cool that
It's super
there
cool.
may be a connection between Bartonella.
But I
Bartonella, isn't that what causes cat scratch
fever.
fever?
Yeah, so that's what I was gonna say. I think the study definitely they're obviously working on it. It's a pilot study at this point, but they did want to mention that there's currently no suggested research that says cat ownership is associated with schizophrenia. So please don't go out and get rid of your cat.
I was not going there. So,
Although I have seen some what I would call crazy cat people.
well, there's crazy dog people as well.
There
So,
are
and there's
crazy.
crazy, there's even crazier horse people oftentimes.
Oh yes,
So,
I've heard. I think crazy equals passion.
there you go.
Yeah.
There you go. Do you remember a month or so ago the Gorilla Glue lady that put Gorilla Glue in her hair and
Yeah, the
was in the
chick.
news?
Yeah, she like videoed it or something and couldn't get it out of her hair.
And then some doctor, I think, came up with some concoctions to help her get it out of her hair. I don't think she had to shave her head. I think they were able to somehow get the glue removed. But
Wow, when I Google it, it says she's pregnant. She found out one day ago.
wow! And congratulations, Gorilla
Congratulations.
Glue lady. Gorilla Glue. I'm trying to find the study here or the article. Methylene diphenyl diisocyanate. So it's going to be very similar to super glue, right? But it's just a little bit different. And there was kind of a retrospective study in four veterinary hospitals that found 22 dogs that had ingested Gorilla Glue. And do you know what it did to them?
It adhered to their stomachs and made them basically obstructed, I would assume.
Yeah, so I mean, it did cause GI irritation, vomiting, and really, gosh, it looks like not immediate. So I think it was more of a foreign body effect. But yeah, this Gorilla Glue would congeal within the stomach, and there was kind of a mixed soft tissue gas pattern that they saw that as the glue hardened, that seemed to be pretty distinct for this type of a foreign body. But I don't know. I guess it does make sense that a dog can get a hold of a bottle of the glue, start chewing on it, ingest
Ingest
it,
it.
and then once it hits the stomach, it solidifies. So,
Weird that like their teeth don't get, glued together or something along those lines, that it pretty much always makes it into the stomach, and so these dogs usually have to get gastrostomies.
Or one dog had an endoscopic removal. So,
Interesting.
we worked on right before we did the podcast. We worked on Ella, who is what is she, 185-pound Great Dane,
She's a big girl, yeah.
that we thought she had swallowed. The owner thought she had swallowed a towel and was obstructed because of the way she was acting. And so we went in and scoped her, and we saw the foreign material in her stomach. And I pulled and pulled and pulled, and my little grabber just wasn't strong enough to grab it and pull it out. And so we went ahead and decided let's take her for exploratory surgery. Celiotomy, right? We've had that word in the past. And we wind up doing a gastrotomy, and even this what are this towel material with a kind of a rubber foreign object toy on the bottom of it, I barely could get it pulled out of the pylorus of the stomach with a big, huge, that big, huge sponge clamp that we have.
Yeah.
So I had a great big hole and barely got it pulled out that way. So
what is the pylorus?
The pylorus is the outflow track of the stomach.
So it's not necessarily like a flap. It's not a gate, but it's, is it a sphincter muscle?
It does. So it does. It's a sphincter, mm-hmm. right? The pyloric sphincter will completely close.
So hence why it's hard. It's not like you're pulling mm-hmm. it around a 90 degree angle or anything, but yeah. it's essentially tightened around this object.
Yeah. So it was, we were pretty lucky to get that diagnosed as quick as we did, and also to realize we needed to convert to an open surgery. So
real quick, just going back to Gorilla Glue Girl that mm-hmm. we were talking about, mm-hmm. you said that there was a doctor that helped her with a concoction. It actually says that he gave her a almost $1,300 plastic surgery operation for free.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so...
I knew, yeah, the time...
She had a four-hour procedure to remove the adhesive.
Yeah. What is his name?
His name is Dr. Michael Obeng. Obeng? Obeng? O-B-E-N-G in L.A.
In Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
She's lucky that he stepped up to do that. So, I guess the last study that I wanted to talk about that was in the news, finds that female veterinarians earn less than their male counterparts. And there's a lot of holes in this article, in this study, because it really is talking about at the top end of veterinary earners. The article goes on to say that it only applies to the top 25% of earners. It's not all throughout the profession, but the headline reads that basically females earn less than males, period.
So
there's a lot of variables.
There's a lot of variables.
There's a ton of variables.
And it's interesting
here.
That we talk about this, right? Because I feel like growing up, even like in schools and like public schools that I went to and that kind of thing, I've always heard that there's this like males are always going to make more than females, that kind of thing. I don't know that I've necessarily seen it or witnessed it, but I guess... I obviously not like on a one-to-one, right? So like if you're going to hire new staff here, right? Like gender to us really never makes a difference.
Correct.
When we're hiring.
Correct.
It's always about experience, availability, their desire, right? Like some people will come in and if they ask for $1, you're going to pay them $1. If they ask for $3, do you pay them $3 or do you negotiate down to like $2, right? So I don't know. I've never really liked this whole like females earn less than males thing, but I do realize that maybe in some industries
that kind inequality of thing, does exist for
yeah,
sure.
But I really feel like in veterinary medicine, especially that whole like male dominance has really flipped to female dominance.
Yeah.
We talked about it in like the applicants going to schools. I mean, to find a male veterinary student is, you know, it's not few and far between, but it's way less than it used to be.
Yeah. No, it's tough.
But I don't know. So I don't know.
So yeah, I mean, again,
I'm not
just,
a big feminist, I guess.
I do think there does, inequality does exist in the world, you know, in many times I don't see it. So I don't doubt that in some situations that this is absolutely the case, but I am very much a person who believes that you kind of make your own luck. You try to set yourself up for success. You know, that doesn't mean things are always going to go well or great, but you are responsible for you.
Sure.
And only you can make yourself the best you can. And so, you know, again, we have this headline and it's going to have people up in arms. And if you just read the headline, oh my gosh, females earn less than males. That's not fair. That's not right. And again, you get into this article, the study, it doesn't know why. They don't know why the top 25% of earners earn less than their male counterparts. But the reasons for the disparity likely settle on personal factors, such as age, experience, as well as other factors about working life, such as the type of practice they work at, the number of hours worked, and whether the setting was urban, suburban, or rural. So there's tons of factors.
There are tons of factors. And one of the things that I read in this article too is that, so even ownership, right? When you look at female owner versus male owner, the study suggests that there are more female owners that have partnerships versus sole proprietorships.
And they're more successful in a partnership than they are as a sole proprietor.
Right. But when you, if you have 100 pieces and you share it, Now each person gets 50, or obviously there's a percentage there and that kind of thing. But I don't necessarily think that gender, and I might be super naive, but I don't necessarily think that gender is a determining factor.
Yeah, I mean, so they the authors of the article recommend that I guess transparency in wages is encouraged, and that the industry supports women-owned practices. I mean, I totally disagree with wage transparency. I think if everybody knew what everybody made in the world, not a happy place. So,
well, sure.
I don't know.
I don't know. There comes this whole word of like fairness and equality and like, I don't know. I am not a huge proponent of the participation trophy, right? Yeah. Like we've talked about that before. I didn't grow up that way. I wasn't taught that way. I know that there's generations after me, obviously, that were. And so I think that's kind of where you get when you have, you know, wage transparency. I think there are benchmarks for wages and for what people should make in this type of job or that type of job, even outside of the veterinary industry, right?
Right.
Places like Glassdoor often will provide some transparency because that information is, you know, provided to them or given from the employee perspective, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm very much in agreement with you that I don't think people should wear their salary on their name tag. Yeah. It doesn't make any sense.
I know oftentimes we're looking for news and newsworthy things. I just don't think this is very newsworthy. And I think the headline is extremely misleading and just trying to rouse people up, which is oftentimes what the news media does. So that's about all I've got. Did you have anything else you want to talk about?
I don't think so. So Easter's coming. Dr. Reese and I talked about it a little bit when we had our show in your absence, how we've discussed that baby chicks and bunnies are not Easter gifts.
Not good gifts.
Yep. I've still seen it on the roads here in our area in Lawrenceville, driving around, and people will have the, you know, bunnies for sale, like roadside stands or roadside signs. They just don't make great gifts, and it's not fair to the bunny if you're only going to have the cute factor and then get rid of it thereafter.
Well, I'll take that a step further. Typically, kittens and puppies aren't good gifts either.
Well, really, no live animal is a good gift.
Because it's a commitment that you're forcing on somebody.
Mm-hmm.
So
for sure. That and the candy, which I guess, are we going to record a podcast on Easter? That's next Sunday.
We'll do it before or after, or I don't know. Real quick, Pepsi and Peeps. Have you heard this?
No.
Pepsi Cola has come out, I believe, with three different flavors that they've combined with Peeps.
So like if you take a bite of a Peep and you take a drink of Pepsi?
Yeah, it's like Pepsi and a Peep combined together, and they're in these little mini cans, you know, the little, I'm assuming the little bitty,
uh-huh,
what are they, 6 ounces, something sure, to that effect. So it'll be very interesting to see what that tastes like and if that's successful or not.
Are you a fan of Peeps?
They're cute to look at, and I'll eat like a half of one to one a year, and then I'm done.
There are so many memes, like on social media. The best way to enjoy a meep is to throw it in the, or a peep is to throw it in the trash.
Oh gosh!
I am for sure of the anti-peep family.
Yeah, if you were a fan, what would be your favorite color of peep to eat?
Pink or yellow? I'm more of a classic person.
Yellow for me, for sure.
Yeah. So on that line, what is your favorite Easter candy?
Oh gosh!
I know mine. This is why I'm asking.
Chocolate bunny, I guess, and that's not really my favorite, but
it's chocolate bunny.
It's the least. Do you like the Cadbury egg with peanut butter in it?
Okay, so that's not Cadbury.
Oh, what's in that?
I love.
Oh, that's a Reese's.
Love, love, love the Reese's peanut butter eggs, and only the individual sized ones. Like if they come in a king size pack and there's like two, they're proportionately sized differently. And it can't be the little mini ones that come in like the fun size bag. It has to be the ones that come individually wrapped like a its own deal.
What's in the center of a Cadbury egg? Is it like
it's like a sugar cream?
Is it like a white cream? Kind of like the cordial cherries?
There's also a little yellow There's also a little yellow usually in there as well, and I don't know what that is.
Do they still make the candied Easter eggs that have the thick, thick shell, and you bite into it, and it's like...
It's like gooey on the inside?
Gooey. It's not really marshmallow, but it's like, whoa. Yeah.
I'm sure they do.
Pure sugar.
Easter was, like, obviously it's more of a religious holiday, and we're talking more about the festive stuff, but Easter baskets and Easter candy were never my thing. That hollow bunny that you're talking about with, I'm assuming, mm-hmm. like, I can visualize the Palmer, like, with the pea having the rabbit ears on it, like, that brand. Just nasty. The chocolate's not good. It's hollow. The only thing that was ever good on those is, like, little candy eyeballs.
Oh, yeah.
They were, like, made out of sugar, you know?
Yeah, like the stuff they make, the necklaces, the...
Yeah, like dots or something like that, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, all right, we... Got off on some weird Easter candy tangent there. So sign us out, please.
Well, if anyone wants to share their favorite Easter candy, that would be fantastic. Hit us up on People, Pets, and Vets on our podcast there. All right, guys. Make sure you check in next week as we discuss more in the news and in our industry. Follow us on Instagram at People, Pets, and Vets. Make sure you follow all of our clinics on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And check out our blogs on our website at mygavet.com. Please hit subscribe wherever you're listening to this podcast. And remember, without people, pets are simply animals.
Bye, guys.